So, the game is on. I would first like to start by inviting our distinguished keynote speakers to take seats in the front for a few questions and answers. I think because of our planning of the conference, the extensive breaks that we've put into the program, we can at some points always steal time from the breaks when we feel like it. And now I think we feel like it. Perhaps some 15 minutes, up to 15 minutes, we can steal time for your questions and their answers. Perhaps we can start defining new problems on the spot right here. So anybody with a burning comment? Question already? While you get started, let me give you a few so that I remember how the day proceeds. So you can make little notes there. There are some changes already that we want to disclose. At 2 o'clock, when we actually start to play the ecosystem level game, we will get started in this auditorium, all of us. So at 2 o'clock, you all come here after the lunch break, and we will be introduced to the concept together. And then, after some perhaps 15 minutes, we will storm to the ecosystem level exercise rooms. And already, also before that already now, we have reshuffled the research presentations such that we basically have researchers present sort of to each other, but also, of course, to anybody who finds their way to them under the grant teams, the six teams. Some of your research colleagues, fellows, might wonder how you are placed under energy, how you are placed under well-being. But it's to your own good, of course, that we've done it and to the best interest of the whole exercise. So with these few words, I believe you are all now ready for making a few notes, comments, or questions to our distinguished presenters. Who wants to start? See, Mikko, the brave one.
Okay, thank you for opening the game playing. I'm Mikko Ruohonen from University of Tampere SIRP unit, and I would like to pose the question for Mr. Harris that you compared the USA and Europe figures. Do you have any figures or experience or comments on Asia level that how the entrepreneurship and the venture capital in Asia works?
It's much more focused on governmental, so there's a lot more government involved behind the institutions that that are actually investing. There's less private equity involved, much more focused on larger, you would maybe see it as VC type investments. So if we take a look at our business plan competitions that we were running globally, very often the Asian teams just barely were allowed to compete because, and here I'm talking more China than if we're speaking Asia, because the way that they're financed are very much governmental, and you would have research results coming into the new venture that were already funded with millions, compared to some of these new startups that were basically, you know, brand new ideas that were funded with tens of thousands of dollars. So it's very, very difficult to compare. Much more governmental, much less private equity involved.
Thank you. It takes us to the full scope of our discussion, which is the entire, obvious, entire planet. And I was myself in a very inspiring exercise not that long ago, where an imaginary corporation was established, and everybody who was establishing this imaginary corporation was able to define a role for them in the corporation, and I was the first to stand up and take over and say, well, I then will be personally responsible for the Earth division. So the other guys had to settle with the rest of it. business creation, global business creation, art versus science. This conference, it's a research conference. This is for us academicians to push the boundary of knowing. And the question of why we do it, why do we do research to begin with? It should take us to the very deep things. What is meaningful to push boundaries? And I think, I was very inspired. I believe you all were also, how the three speakers sort of set the scene for us. And basically, there are many aspects there. First of all, from the first keynote speech, when you think of the challenge where it boils down to, what is the role of academia in the midst of all those realizations we have in front of us? How should academia change? How should research change? That was, I think, what Ray Osterlin left us with, pondering for the 2 days that we're together. When I think of Tanne Letikka's inspiring notes from inside, the bloodletting was, I think, something that really is a game stopper. When you think of, are you part of bloodletting? Are we part of bloodletting? And then, what should we see? What risks should we take ourselves to push the boundary? And I think in particular, the analogy to medical doctors who cure patients, who produce new medicines that actually help us see more years on the planet. How about business doctors? This is something that's been a burning issue for me personally. I think we should challenge ourselves by requiring that university produces doctors who can build business, who can cure business, who can simply. And this is something what we can do. Believe me, we can do it. It's tough because there are no such programs, there are no such doctoral programs, there are no such professorships on the planet, not even in the greatest places. Mark Harris shared with us his notes. Extensive tenure with Intel Corporation. He's been working with the greatest universities across the planet. And even those universities are more concerned by perhaps bringing, like some people phrase it, horses to courses, entrepreneurs who actually speak to students so that the professors perhaps and the researchers can relax a little bit. We don't require the new thing from each other. So I can go on. I mean, I can talk and talk. If you don't have anything to ask these people. I have Ben here, and I have Leslie. Ben was first, but Leslie is I see your hand. Just a second.
Thank you. Mr. Tecky focused on the key competences that were required. My wonder for all three of you, we focus a lot on the main entrepreneur, okay, the person that's CEO, okay. But in my experience, what as important as the CEO is the team around the CEO, the 5 to 10 people are going to make the company. What do you look for the same type of competencies, or do you feel they should be complementary? And I'd like to hear you all about that.
Well, one thing that we're looking at when in entrepreneurship education is to train what entrepreneurship is, and that can be for the natural entrepreneur, but also for the rest of the team. There's a lot of discussion, can entrepreneurship be taught? And the response that we have is, yes, it can, but you can't teach someone to become an entrepreneur. But an entrepreneurial team that has enjoyed the same type of education and understands all of the pitfalls you can run into, understands where you are in the process, is much more functional than if you have the one driving entrepreneur and people that are still trying to figure out what's going on in that process. So it is, yes, there's, I would say when we're talking about entrepreneurship, we're talking about the team. There is an, over time there is a natural entrepreneur that evolves, but it's a lot more effective to have the same understandings.
I've done this a bunch of times, established businesses and gathered teams, and thought about it a great deal. And one specific problem there is that because by nature a startup company is a temporary organization that doesn't know yet what it's going to do, it's really, really hard to acquire specific competencies or domain knowledge from the people in the team that you don't know yet. Do you need a computer scientist, or do you need a human resources person, or whatever? So it becomes quite difficult in that sense, and attitude really raises up as one of the main criteria to qualify to become a part of a startup team. And you have to look for meta-level competencies in people. Simply look at their capability of learning, accepting new things, attitude towards challenge, going through the hard iterative cycle of failing many times and then perhaps eventually succeeding, perhaps not. And it's these kind of things that you have to look for. And nowadays, I tend to concentrate a lot also on human interaction skills, that how well these people really are capable of inspiring each other, creating trust between each other, and learning together. Because the team doesn't yet know what's it going to do specifically in terms of substance and in terms of concrete results, they need to have the capabilities of discovering this on the way. And often this is very stressful, and it kind of drags the startup company culture towards unhealthy corner where people don't talk to each other and they disagree on goals and objectives. And that's typically when companies fail, when they enter this kind of space and everything disintegrates between the team there. And people with good interpersonal skills, with good interaction skills, they know how to avoid this, and they know how to get out of the corner of death and somehow make the team stick together and find their way out eventually. So I look for meta skills, but they are not necessarily similar as the main entrepreneur. There can be significant differences, of course, and then complementing differences as well.
Well, I have had an opportunity to become acquainted with especially international business entrepreneurship in Europe and Asia, Africa, and United States. And it seems to be that the major challenge in that area is for sure how to become a capable international business manager. But still more important seems to be how to become a capable international business leader. Because when you are working at home, the environment is known to you. But when you enter abroad, the question is how on earth you are able to lead the people around you. And the lessons what you have got at home are not enough abroad. So international business entrepreneurship education really should stress much more international leadership than what it has done recently. Certainly, the basic international business management teaching and education is needed, but leadership skills are perhaps a crucial part of that whole teaching environment.
Now we have Leslie.
Okay, my question relates to the diagram that was on your presentation, Mark, where you showed education at one side of the screen, real life company startup. Yeah? And the question, which is for all three panel members, is about that interface between education and real life. Where should one start, the other end, what's possible, what are the real constraints in this space? Because there's lots of people looking at this issue of, you know, should education do more to prepare people for real life? Or there could be another school of thought that says you've just got to jump off the cliff and see what happens. So I'd be interested in the panel's comments on that one.
Maybe I'll start off there, since the diagram was for me. If you saw that diagram at the bottom, across the entire pipeline, it said entrepreneurship education. Ideally, if possible, we should try to get some of that education into the universities. But at the moment, to be honest, it's probably, you know, way below a promille of the students get that type of education. Further down the pipeline, the entrepreneurs that are creating the businesses don't really care about the certificate. They want the knowledge. And so you need to discuss with them and try to understand where they are, what they know, and then put a specific program together to try to address that. Yes, you can toss people into cold water, and some will survive, but a lot will drown. And what you want to do if you're trying to drive entrepreneurship through that pipeline is to try to get as many as possible not to drown just because they weren't educated. They will drown later on because their approach to the market was wrong or other things. But try to get that basic knowledge to them so that they, you know, are not succeeding because of trivial things or relatively trivial things. There's much more complex things to focus on.
One of the growth companies that I work with is a company called Deep Lead, which focuses on this leadership issue, helping different organizations to develop leadership as the key competitive advantage that they have. And I'm one of the coaches, one of the leadership coaches that goes around and tries to get this thing sorted out. And in that company, we have a research director who's actually an adjunct professor. And he always says that nothing's as practical as good theory. And I found this to be true in a way that I constantly find it very inspiring to read what the academia produces and all of these elegant, beautiful, even aesthetic thoughts that come out of research. And I try to always bridge the gap of it being research done for a different purpose in different circumstances on how to apply it practically in my situation. And this is something that is quite a bit missing typically in entrepreneurship education or in the processes of how entrepreneurs build these companies, that they often tend to too much ignore this part of research or what the academic side produces, but I found it very, very useful. And one of the things that keeps it going for me is mentorship and coaching, constantly trying to challenge yourself with these new ideas on how to apply them in practice in my instance. And one of the greatest kind of allies that an entrepreneur can have in these situations is really measuring that with all these experiments that growth companies need to run, all the trying and failing, measuring results really becomes extremely valuable for them. So I try to combine whatever research produces into finding a practical way of applying it, and then I always try to measure the outcome. And this is kind of the core process that I run. So if you could build something similar into a program or somehow transfer this attitude to students, they might be finding it beneficial as well. Just a thought there.
Well, perhaps I could add that when Aalto University was created, we had three universities whose forces were combined: the Helsinki University of Technology, the Helsinki School of Economics, and the Helsinki University of Design and Arts. But where on earth is Helsinki University? Now, in our training for entrepreneurship, we are actually forced to consider the establishment of so-called area institutes for Eastern Europe, Africa, Asia, and so on. And goodness gracious, all of these institutes already exist at the Helsinki University. So what was perhaps a smaller strategic mistake was that the Helsinki University was left out about Aalto Alliance. we would have got an excellent type of area-based leadership knowledge through Helsinki University.
I cannot but thank you, panel. I can also propose that perhaps we produce a statement and everybody can sign that statement where we, EBRF 2011 participants, propose that Aalto University actually becomes a school within University of Helsinki, which is a large university in Finland. I think this is a very creative, game-changing proposition on the spot. Now, I'm already stealing the time that I promised. I promised you 15 minutes minimum for break, but I still have one announcement to make before we thank the panel and close the first session. Some of you who came here with competitive minds to win this year's cup, the Global Academic Cup. Last year we disclosed and established this cup. We had one set of rules, one set of a game a year ago, and Metso Award emerged. You have the victors here among us today. Rubais wanted to make a comment, but I declined it because I could. No, because I had to because of the time right now. But Rubais will be with us also in the final ceremony, and at that point I would like to hear comments from the last year's victors. But this year, the Global Academic Cup has been is being sponsored by the company being launched during the conference, Global Faculty Partners for Problems at Solving. GFP. So GFP award will be basically awarded to the research presentation, the authors of the winning research proposal here, which has the highest impact in the ecosystem level exercise that will be conducted during the 2 days. The panel this year will be the playmakers of each ecosystem level exercise, and they will use the best advice from this panel, which is to actually crowdsource their decision. Team up and partner with the keynote players of the ecosystem level exercises and any other active participants to find out which of the research presentations is worthy of the award, which then be declared the closing ceremony. And technically the sponsorship will be that the limited partner interest payment of the authors, author or authors, will be sponsored by the co-founders of the company. With these few words, I wish you again a great conference. I hope you enjoyed the networking breaks. So there will be next just a good 10-minute bio break, and then at 11 o'clock sharp, we will start the ecosystem level exercises with the research scholarly contribution. So I hope you all find your way to the rooms, and during the lunch you will just get more into the ecosystem level teams, and then at 2 o'clock we come back to this room, 2 sharp, for about 15 minutes when we will set the rules of the game before we go back to the ecosystem level exercise and start co-creating. Now, with huge hand of applause, thank you to the panelists, and thank you.